Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 27, delivered on December 4, 2018. The title of this lecture is Securities Offerings.
Today, special topics, securities offerings. Before I begin the lecture, let's have a look. Slaughterhouse on the street today. The Dow down 3.25. I'm sorry, Dow down 3.1. S&P 500 down 3.25. The NASDAQ down almost 4%. Now here's why. Look at 12408 on the yield curve. What do you see? What do you see? Yep, it inverted. On the 3.5, yesterday it was an inversion of one basis point. Today an inversion of 2 basis points. I told you it would happen. I even gave you the time frame in which it would happen. And then all of a sudden, well, here we are. Recession 3 to 6 months out. This one will be... Now, not every inversion of a yield curve has led to a recession. A couple of times it's just been an economic pause, 0% growth. This one is going to be a recession, I'll tell you that right now. It'll be a pretty strong one, too. As a 3-5-year notch, that's not a pleasant sign right there. So as you are going in to try to get your internships, the economy will begin to be sliding. Next year, we'll still be in the recession when you're trying to get jobs. This is how it works, unfortunately for you. Welcome to the 21st century. Interestingly, from a political standpoint, the recession will not begin until the new Congress has been in session. Now, the new Congress has one chamber of the legislature that was flipped from one party to the other, and rest assured that there will be a lot of attempts to blame the new Congress and the fact that there was a flip of the House of Representatives for this. That's just plain nonsense. This has been building. I've been showing you how we've been teetering and drifting, and now here we are. Spank me. We got the inversion. And then you got the talking heads. Well, this is a shock. Well, no, it's not. Anyone who had an ounce of education in economics and finance would have known this was coming. But now we've got the signal, and this is when you begin, going back to what I showed you before, remember I showed you different states of the economy and your portfolio allocation between stocks, bonds, and cash. This is where you would begin your movement from an aggressive portfolio to the neutral, and then probably as the signs become clear that there is going to be a strong recession, you move to the defensive portfolio. But this is the time when your portfolio control understanding begins to kick in for you. This is going to be a dark one, like I said. And fortunately, I've got a job, so it's not my problem. But it is your problem, unfortunately. And again, the stock markets reacted very strongly. And this was not the crash. The 3%, 4% is pennies and dimes. A crash would be something along the line of 15 to 25% drop in the market. Is that going to happen? Probably, but not today. This was just, the bears were just having some fun today, smacking at the bulls. So keep all this in mind. I've shown you that what was going to happen. And so there is value in this course, in that at least you understand the warning signs that were coming and to some extent the causes of the recession that is coming. And no amount of talking by politicians, no amount of talking heads trying to make you feel good, no amount of hope is going to change the fact that we're going to drop into a recession. And it's going to be a difficult job market, just when the job market was getting pretty darn good. Although it had some weaknesses recently. Yeah, that's my cat's looking at my camera, my security camera. You want to see one of my cats? This is the one that actually writes incorrect information on Wikipedia to fool you. You notice the smile? That's a real smile. That's Phineas.
Where's Fur? Come on. Tell me about Captain Fur.
Huh? No, no, not yet. That's next. But that's my shelter cat. Came from the shelter. Anyway, enough of this nonsense. We're talking about a recession, for heaven's sakes, here. Act sober. Now to the topic of today. This is not in the book, so take good notes. You will have something about this on your final exam, whichever way you want to do it. And Thursday we review for the final. That's what we do on Thursday. So you come with questions, because this isn't just a television show where you get to watch. You ask me questions. You could say, is this going to be on the final? If it's not, I'll tell you. No, I'm not going to ask that. It will be more difficult than the midterm if you take the essay version. The multiple choice version is its own animal. But we'll talk about that on Thursday. For today, I'm going to talk about offerings of securities. Now, this applies to debt and equity both, but I will put this in the context of a stock offering. Okay? So, but know that I would also mean if you were issuing bonds or notes, this would equally apply. And it would equally apply to common stock, preferred stock, what have you, what I'm going to say here today. Now, securities are at the federal level governed by two separate pieces of legislation. One, the Securities Act of 1933. Oops, Securities Act of 1933. And then the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. You see, as I have told you before, the 1920s were the roaring 20s, where the conservative idea that the best government is no government. Leave markets alone, they'll take care of their own problems, they're self-correcting, self-policing, blah, blah, blah. You give all kinds of latitude and low taxes and all that to the rich, and it will trickle down to the poor. And the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. By the time we're in the later 1920s, it is getting seriously bad. Although you mostly still hear about how great it was for the rich until 1929, when the stock market crashed. And then 2 years, 3 years later, we're in the Great Depression. So much for the idea of free markets. And every time I hear someone, I'm a libertarian, well, good for you. Welcome to the world that really happens, where that belief in the free markets really comes to bear in the fire and shrapnel of riots in the streets and poor people dying of diseases that they don't need to and starvation. So when 1932 elections came around, the people had gotten sick to death of the lies. And they kicked the bastards out and they put in an entire new Congress and a new kind of president that would crack down on the cheaters, the liars, the thieves in the financial industry, as well as those bosses who thought that they could do whatever they wanted to their employees. And so began the era of regulation, heavy, strong regulation. This one is so, these two acts are so strong that they have stood for closing in on a century now. Unfortunately, they are weaker in their enforcement in some ways. Every time a new scandal comes up in the finance industry, suddenly we find, well, we'll have some reform. Well, you should have done it right all along, and then we wouldn't have this problem. Like Enron, like the Bank of America, like Citigroup. But there you go. Anyway, in terms of securities offering, the Securities Act of 1933 governs primary markets. In other words, when you as a company sell stock to raise capital for the company, that's a primary offering, and that offering is governed by the Securities Act of 1933. So this is the primary market. The Securities Exchange Act of 1934, where I've bought your stock and I just trade it with you, that through a broker, him, that would be the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, the secondary market. Now, this is an oversimplification, but I'm not going to go in. You might think it looks kind of deep and complicated, but I'm just barely touching the surface here in this class. Stay tuned for some of my higher courses, which I'm sure you'll all want to take. Okay. Now, start with this statement. If, and I'm going to focus on the Securities Act of 1933 here. If you are going to sell stock, you are governed by the Securities Act of 1933. If you are going to sell 1,000 shares to raise money for your company, $10 a share, the Securities Act of 1933 governs that action. If you're going to try to raise $50 million in common stock, the Securities Act of 1933 applies to you. It governs your behavior and your process, and to some extent, the outcome. The Securities Act of 1933 has some exemptions that allow you to raise money in certain ways, in certain amounts, from certain parties, where you don't need to go through the ungodly hoops of a full registration, but assume that you must fully register those securities, following the rules, the forms, and all of that to raise money. But there are exemptions that might apply. But also keep in mind that the states have their own divisions of securities that will also apply to your offering if you solicit offers or sell to citizens of that state. So it's not enough for you to register an offering at the federal level. You must also find out what is expected of you at the state level as well. Some states are fairly lightweight, and especially in certain circumstances. Other states, it feels like you're just doing the same thing you did with the SEC all over again, except by the state's rules. It's really dependent. Some states are very hostile to you trying to sell stock to their citizens. Some states are a lot easier. Some states have been easy in the past, and they've become more hostile. One of my big problems was that there were a couple of states. I was just a consultant. I wasn't a principal of these companies. I was just a consultant. But there were a couple of states where they came after me. They saw me as a target because they thought that I was in charge of scamming their citizens. Usually it was some politically ambitious little toad in their division of securities who decided that he or she wanted to crucify me so that he or she could rise in political status. That's why I tell you now that there are some states that I will not go to visit. And I'm not kidding. I mean, the statute of limitations is over, but I still get the heebie-jeebies thinking about a vacation there. I can tell you right now that one of those states, now back in the day, there were some states that allowed you to run blank check corporations. A blank check corporation, you just say, okay, we started a corporation. We don't know what we're going to do with it, but we're going to raise some money to figure out what we're going to do with it. Basically, it's an open-ended thing. Now, one of those states, a couple of those states, they had been very easy on this, and then suddenly they got very strict. One of those was Utah. Now, in Utah, there was an examiner in their division of securities who wanted my hide on a wall for his political future. He came after me so many different ways, and it all boiled down to one late afternoon when he called me and we talked. I finally was able to turn the conversation around to discussing my interest in becoming a Mormon. I kid you not. That was the only reason he backed off me.
Was it in Utah?
Well, yes.
So he was Mormon.
Well, duh, yes. I mean, he thought one of the selling points was, you know, polygamy, and that just didn't strike me as good. Shut up. Okay, but I'm not actually not kidding. There were others. They came close, but they never quite had what they needed because I was still clean with the SEC, with the feds. Now, understand that the Securities Exchange Commission regulates the registrations and a whole lot of other things. Back in the day, in my time, there was kind of this weird paradoxical thing. I'd call them to get some information. They'd always start out with, well, we cannot give you advice. You just file, and if you screw up, we send you to jail or something like that, or we fine you. But then they would then give you some help. It was kind of like they'd make their disclosure, we can't help you, okay? You might want to do this or that. So it was kind of like that back in that time. They then got really, really strict after the Enron fiasco. And they just cracked down. By that time, it was illegal for me to do the consulting that I had done all those years. You could do what I had done only if you were a lawyer or an accountant. So I called those rules the lawyer and accountant full employment assurance rules. They got rid of the bottom feeders like me and the small-time jockeys. But then, since then, they've gotten so loose and so lax in some ways. And then they just once in a while make some big show about something or other. But, I mean, the kinds of securities and derivatives they're allowing now, it's just like I wouldn't have even thought of doing those kinds of insane things that they're doing these days. And the way that they're advertised these days, I mean, that's not even legal. But you can see offerings on Twitter, for God's sake. I've been seeing these bizarre derivative securities offered on Twitter that are actually backed by the income stream of athletes and entertainers. I mean, so the Securities Act of 1933 has variable enforcement. Over the years, I mean, in the early years, right after this was passed, they were working hard as they could to crack down on all the cheats, liars, scammers, and all of that in the securities industry. Then there was a period when they lightened up under a new political party's dominance in the 1950s. And then they've cracked down, then they've loosened up. Right now, it's kind of weird. Sometimes they're hard as hell, and in other situations and circumstances, it's almost like, where's the Securities and Exchange Commission? Where's the SEC to stop this? Anyway, assume right away that if you are going to sell stock, you must register this stock with the Securities and Exchange Commission. You have to follow their rules, and I'll talk about the rules. However, there are exemptions available from the registration. Know this. In general, if you use an exemption, your stock is not, I sell you stock under an exemption. I don't have to make the registration statements and all that kind of stuff. I've found one of those little, kind of like loopholes, but it's not really. It's fully okay. However, that stock, you may not sell that stock to someone else. It is not, quote unquote, freely tradable. It is subject to Rule 144, which means that the stock is restricted. And it will, if you have an actual physical stock certificate, there will be a stamp on it, red stamp, restricted. You cannot sell it. You would have to subsequently register that stock to sell it, or have some other way that you could get it out, get the restrictions label off it. Now, oftentimes when a company starts, it will give founder stock to these organizers, the creators of it. So in this case, if you had founder stock, it would be subject to Rule 144, fully restricted. You would not be able to freely trade that. You couldn't sell that stock. However, as time goes on, if the company becomes a public company, there are what we used to call leakage rules, where you were allowed to, if a lawyer said you qualify to leak some of the stock, then you could take that letter and some of your stock and send it to the stock transfer agent, and the stock transfer agent would send you back the certificates without the restricted symbol on them. So you can leak out Rule 144 stock if there's a market for it. That's the other thing, too. Even if stock is not free, even if your stock is freely tradable, it doesn't really matter if there's not a market for the stock. You need to go through an exchange to get a trading symbol. So that if you have stock and you want to sell it, you could call a broker and say, I've got XYZT stock, I want to sell 100 shares at market. The broker could look up and see the symbol for it and find a matching buy order for it. But that doesn't happen automatically. With the NASD, you have to go through their qualification process. And that process occurs on Form 15C-11. And let me tell you, the NASD, you go to the compliance officers, you send them all of this information, vast amounts of information. They then go through it, and the compliance officer will treat, the compliance officer I worked with, and I think I told you about this before, she treated me like dirt. She abused me. She called me bad names. She called me a stupid man. I really loved her. She was great. Her name was Claire, and she taught me how to do it right. First, she made sure that I knew that she was my daddy, and then she began to teach me how to make the filings. Not just to make the filings, but what to say, even down to the notes to the financial statement, how I'd write them in such a way that the company is protected from shareholder derivative lawsuits, that the company is protected from other possible problems with defective statements. And so as time went on, I was able to get trading symbols for my clients by doing the 15C-211s. It is now illegal as hell for me to do it. As a matter of fact, one of the last ones that I was involved in, 15C211, was when the rules were transitioning over so the consultants couldn't do it. Only lawyers could do it. And they tried to come after me on it. Fortunately, I hadn't done this one, but someone I knew had. And so they were very dedicated to getting rid of us small players in the market, cleaning up and getting only lawyers and accountants to play the games, just like the SEC was. Claire was gone and all that, so I just backed out of the industry completely at that point. Okay, now, let me tell you about the exemptions. When you don't have to register an offering, there are three that are called Regulation D exemptions. We call them Reg D. Now, there's the Reg D 504, which is weird. There's the Reg D 505 and the Reg D 506. And then there's one called the Regulation A. We call this one the Bob Marley because it was the Reg A. Get it? Hell with it. I tried my best humor. Anyway, okay, now Reg D 504 is an oddball. It's called the $1 million offering. You don't have to register the offering. And weirdly, the stock, okay, it's different now than when I was doing this, but it's still like the same. The stock is freely tradable. But you can offer up to $1 million. You're still going to need to get a trading symbol to do this. Now, I use the Reg D 504 in several cases. I claimed exemption from registration. However, you still must do the forms, especially with the state in which you are going to try to sell the stock. Now, some states, actually, I can't even tell you how many it is now, but a number of states have a uniform application that is filled out. So you fill it out once, and then you send it to those states, and they'll all consider that meeting their Division of Securities requirements. Other states are on their own about this. But the Reg D 504 creates freely tradable stock. You can raise up to $1 million. But you still have to seek qualification from the states in which the offering is made. The stock is freely tradable, and I actually went to the NASD, and I got three trading symbols, I think, in my time off stock that was Reg D 504. It was freely tradable. There's something else I was going to say about the 504. Yeah. It's still around, and it's a way. Don't abuse it, though, because if you violate the rules, you're in trouble. For one thing, I said this once a few minutes ago. I talked about an offer to sell and a solicitation of an offer to buy, and a sale. Again, there are three different parts. An offer to sell. Madam, would you like to buy 1,000 shares of my stock? That's an offer to sell. A solicitation. Sir, would you like to buy 1,000 shares of my stock? You're saying, now, wait a minute, isn't that what you just said to her? Yeah, they are technically, but the offer, I'll sell you 1,000 shares. A solicitation, you offer to buy 1,000 shares, okay? Those are two distinct things. Now, I'm selling you 1,000 shares. That's a third thing. You can't do any of these if it's non-exempt until there's a qualification. Okay, so you've got to be careful about that. A great story, famous story, and I've heard variations on it, so This may be, huh? Without qualification. Now, I'll explain qualification in a minute. Qualification. Now, there was a story that's gone around for a long time. There were two investment banker jockeys, younger folks, that were sitting at a table at a nice restaurant just off Wall Street, and they were jotting down, they were working on doing an offering for a company that wanted to go public. And they were jotting down different ideas on napkins or a napkin, you know, $20 per share, question mark, 4 million shares, question mark, common stock, question, you know, just kind of batting around ideas. They left the restaurant. The waitress that cleaned up the table picked up the napkins and kept them and bought stock when the offering actually happened. The investment bankers were fined massively by the SEC because those napkins had constituted an unlawful offering of stock. They were a defective prospectus. So you be careful. I know there are, some of you at least, have the imagination and the go in you to become entrepreneurs. And you talk a lot about, you know, capital, you got to raise it. You have to be damn careful about how you're going to raise money. Don't think that this is just something we can do. You can't, unless you understand how exemptions from registration work. Now, the Reg D 504, you're still going to have to take care of the states because every person you sell to is probably a citizen of some state, and so your offer to sell, solicitation of for an offer to buy, and or sale is going to mean that you must meet that person's state of citizenship requirements. Yes. You don't file a 504. Okay, stop. You do not file a 504. It is exempt from the registration. But you will still have to meet the qualifications of the state in which you offer, solicit for offers, or sell. So if you don't want to sell in Washington, D.C., stay out of Washington, D.C. Okay? Oh, will you stop that? It will fall. No, it will fall under the, it has its own rules on this, especially Washington. Go.
So essentially the SEC will audit you
by the state. Oh, I can promise you that federal prisons are not nearly as bad as state prisons.
No, that's true.
No, that's true. It is, federal prisons, you can go to Club Fed if you're a financial cheat. At the state level, you will be married to someone named Bubba. And it costs them only 5 packs of cigarettes. Yeah, that's exactly right, though. Look, the SEC was not my problem. I consider them sort of like a grouchy uncle in my time. They growled at me. They beat me up with deficiencies in registration statements. But at the end of the day, they had a sense that I really was an honest player. I wanted to do it right, and with, you know, I have my degrees back here, but I was the first to admit that all that college had just gotten me started. Now I was in combat where things got really, really intense. And so they understood that I could be one of those forces that was good. The states, you know, they saw me as less than an earthworm. And so, yeah, the states can be your biggest problem. And some states are just so hostile. I mean, there are states that I won't go to, but there are also states that I would go to, but I would never dream of trying to sell stock to their citizens without a lot of lawyers wrapped around me.
Texas?
Mm-hmm. Texas is difficult. There are ways around Texas. It's Texas, for God's sake. Bad states, Utah, Nevada, they used to be freewheeling Wild West states. Now they are real difficult. South Dakota. Florida is a freaking nightmare. You see, with Florida, here's the problem. You see, a lot of companies that are small, they don't want to use an investment banker. They want to try to do a $1 million offering on their own. You know, the company officers sell the stock to their friends and family. Well, that's wonderful, except Florida decided, anyone who sells stock has to be a registered broker-dealer. So a small company that specializes in some silly thing, they want to raise $1 million, they have to go through the hoops of getting a broker-dealer license. That means a Series 27, a Series 24, a Series 7. Oh, you're bringing in an investment banker who's going to do a best efforts offering for you. Yeah. Because they're going to be me, and I will take a whole lot out of your butt. When I ran a small securities company with a penny stock company, you come to me and you say, you want me to do a best efforts Western offering for you? Oh, sure I will. I'm going to keep 20% of whatever I sell. So if I raise $1 million, you get $800,000. Well, then we'll just raise $1.2 million. Well, then you don't qualify for a Reg D 504, do you, Sparky? You see? I will take your butt to help you with that one. And not only that, I'll have my other brokers, penny stock brokers, help me. And you know what they're going to want? They're going to want you to give them some freely tradable stock in exchange for them helping to sell your stock of your company. How many shares? Oh, 20,000 would get me a market maker. And if you need five, that's 100,000 shares right there that are gone from your $1 million offering right there. Yeah. Good business. Okay, now, the 505 and the 506 are somewhat different, but they're both, I'm going to draw a broad brushstroke here. They are private placements. The stock that you sell is restricted, fully restricted under Rule 144. This would be angel investors, okay? This would be stock you would sell to them. It's restricted under Rule 144. Now, these offerings, you can sell more. However, the investors, and again, this is a broad brushstroke, they have to be sophisticated investors. They have to be knowledgeable about what they are doing at a good level. They have to be wealthy enough to take a bath on it. If they're not knowledgeable themselves, they have to have the advice of strong legal counsel to back them up with their decision making. Then you can do a private placement with them. You can claim exemption under 506. Okay, now, there's even a little more to it than this, and I've got to be careful about saying too much. I can say that again?
So 505,
506
is restricted?
Restricted, private, this is private placements. Okay, now, the thing, though, here is, I can also do a trick called bundling. You are a sophisticated investor. You're fully able to understand that I'm selling you an extremely risky security. And you're all in because Rule 144, you can't sell it. I eventually can, and I'll tell you how that happens in a minute. But you've got these four relatives. They're not quite so bright, you know, because your daddy was pretty good, but their daddy, he liked the sauce quite a bit, and so they came out, as we used to say in Kentucky, their cornbread just ain't done in the middle. But you could bundle them under you so that I can get some more stock sold. And again, this is a very simplistic way of explaining it. But that, easy does it. Folks, you know, geez, you're looking at it. Cornbread that's not done in the middle is actually kind of tasty. It's a little gooey, sort of like one of those cream-filled cupcakes, except it's cornbread. Yeah. You know, this class, anyway, okay. There's one more called a Reg A. The Bob Marley offering, the Regulation A. the Reg A, you can raise more money, but you cannot raise an unlimited amount. There is a limit on how much you can raise. And I told you the famous story about the company that wanted to do this, invoke Reg A. So they put offering circulars, which are the low-end version of prospectuses, in their six-bottle beer containers that they sold. Well, it sold like hotcakes because all these beer drinkers, you're sitting there one night, you've got beer in you, enough that your memories are kind of hazy of what happened right after the fight between the midgets and your daughter. But anyway, you buy some of the stock on this. Well, they oversubscribed. They raised far more than they were allowed to under Reg A. So the SEC spanked them real hard with a leather belt. Give it all back, pay this big fine, and do it over again the right way. So you can't just say the SEC isn't involved. Oh, yeah. And the states are involved, too. Where was the beer sold? Was the beer sold to citizens of states where you had not given the proper notification of the offering and all that kind of stuff? So you've got to be careful even in these private placements, okay? No, no, I don't think so. I'm not going to state that clearly, but the states can exercise their dual sovereignty authority. In other words, the Constitution has a part that's called the Supremacy Clause. The Supremacy Clause says that if there is a dispute, the federal government rules. However, there is also a part of that that says that the federal government can devolve responsibilities to the states. In other words, the federal government says, yes, technically Supremacy Clause says we're in charge, but in this case, this is something we don't want to deal with, so the states deal with it. And then there is that dual sovereignty where some things, both the feds and the state, deal with it at the same time. So in other words, you could commit a federal crime, you could also be prosecuted at the state level for the same crime, and that would not be double jeopardy. That's one of the things that's in play right now, and I won't talk about who this involves, but there is someone who could pardon himself and his family from the federal crimes, but he has no authority over the states which can prosecute for the same crimes. So there would be dual sovereignty. So in this case, securities law sort of borders. States can't supersede what is at the federal level, but they can work parallel to the federal level in securities activities. They can't say, well, the SEC, the feds say, you can do this, but we say you can't. Not technically, but they can modify for the citizens of their states for added protection or for to be consistent with the Constitution of that state. It gets complicated. It gives me a headache talking about it. So anyway, now, suppose that you're an investor in a company that sold common stock in reliance on Reg D 506. I am the company, and I was in reliance. I raised a couple of million dollars by selling restricted common stock to you and your friends, who are all sophisticated investors. Now, those stock certificates have a restricted stamp, boom, boom, on them. I never went public with the company. This was a private placement, so this is technically still what we call a private company, or another term for it is a close company, C-L-O-S-E. Like, for example, my company is a close S corporation because I never went public, and there's only me. However, suppose that a few years from now you start fussing at me. I'd really like to sell some of my stock. I really want to lower my position. I was there to help you out at first, but I'm not here forever. I want to sell to another owner. Okay. I can actually register that private stock as if I were doing a public offering. Now, oftentimes in IPOs, initial public offerings, you will notice that they are not just registering new stock they're selling, but they're also registering restricted stock that they already sold in private placements. So there is that possibility. But let's say that I don't really need money. I'm doing well, but you want to have your stock freely tradable. Okay, there's a way to do that. This is the super form. You go straight down the throat of the Securities and Exchange Commission in reliance on Securities Act of 1933, and you file what is called Form 10. This is an 800-pound gorilla registration. Straight up, you're registering stock. Now, technically, any public offering, like an IPO, is actually a variation on a Form 10. It is the original document that makes a company public. I should make a note here. And I said this before, and I have to emphasize it now. Government entities never approve anything. Don't ever get the idea, well, the Securities and Exchange Commission approved my offering. No. The term that is used is qualify. The Securities and Exchange Commission qualifies an offering. The state of Illinois qualified my application to make my company a corporation. That's qualified. So don't ever say, well, they approved of this. So anyway, we go back to Form 10. You file it with the SEC. They come back at you with tons of deficiencies, bitch and complain to you. You fix the deficiencies, you file, they complain, file, deficiencies, and eventually they'll qualify it if it's good. Now, the Form 10, you notice all semester long I've been saying, well, let's go to the Edgar site, let's find their K's and Q's, their Form 10K, their Form 10Q. And all. In other words, whenever a company files its quarterly 10s, the 10Qs, it's filing an amendment to its original Form 10. Whenever a company files a Form 10K, it is filing an annual required amendment to its original Form 10. So in other words, the Form 10 is the parent, and all of the filings required after that are the children of the original Form 10 filing. So the K's and Q's, okay, this is the update from where we were last time, which was the update from where we were the last time, and somewhere way back, this is the update from the original Form 10. That's a very good way of thinking about it. Now, the Form 10, I did a couple of Form 10s to register stock, of restricted stock. They are a monstrous document. The 10Ks and the 10Qs, if you are in a public corporation, you guys are all going to go out there. You're all going to be important big dogs and all that. But for a while, you're going to be on all kinds of very undesirable committees, maybe. And literally, they have all these little teams and committees that put together the numbers to send to the accountants and the lawyers so that they can aggregate them into appropriate documents to file as K's and Q's. The Form 10... you just have to hire legal dogs and accountants that are going to cost you a fortune to do a Form 10, especially now that bottom feeders like me are not allowed to do that kind of stuff anymore. Haven't been for years. I'm not sure if I was ever actually legally allowed to do it, but I did it. No one got me in trouble for it. But anyway, okay. That's a Form 10. It registers stock. Now, once I have registered your stock, you can send those stock certificates that had that big red restricted on them, you can send those back to the stock transfer agent for the company, and they'll reprint them without the restricted and send them back to you so that they're freely tradable. Now, you still want to probably have a trading symbol, and I'm seriously in doubt that the NASDAQ is going to give a trading symbol to a company. All it has is a couple of angel investors who got their stock open from restriction. You probably still need to do an offering. I can't say that for sure because I never did that. But, okay, that's a Form 10. That would be an original registration of common stock that was probably already outstanding. Now, let's talk about how would you do an IPO or a secondary public offering. In other words, how would you sell stock to raise money for the company? This takes us into the realm of the S's, the Form S's. The 800-pound gorilla, you can raise an unlimited amount of money selling an unlimited amount of stock. Well, that's a little extraordinary. But that's Form S1. I did one Form S1 in my time. It was a freaking nightmare. It was the hardest thing that I ever did. I got all the numbers together myself from this little podunk company, which unfortunately was already public, but it had gone so long without filing that I had to do an S1 to bring it back to life and raise new capital for it. It took several months, and I made the initial filing to the SEC. It was several weeks later that my fax machine started up. Yes, this was in the Stone Age when we didn't have email. I'm so glad I had a brand new roll of fax paper, because the deficiency statement was coming in from the SEC. 496 deficiencies in my filing of Form S1. I was a wreck. Later that evening, I called an old consultant. He'd helped me out in the past, and I was blubbering, and he said, 496, not bad for a first time. And he said, you go through, look at them. You're going to notice a lot of them are just technical piss-ass stuff. He was right. I mean, it would just clean up a lot of them were. Get things right. Say it the right way. Put it in the right place and all that kind of stuff. I refiled after I fixed those, and it came back. I think it was like 3 days and three nights. I just kept going at it because I didn't get paid until I got. And then I got the next deficiency back. It went down to 6. And interestingly, all but one of them were just really trivial. I just missed them or not understood what the deficiency was. And then I filed again, and the gold happened. The SEC declared that the Form S1 was qualified. I mean, that was like the biggest rush of my life at that time. Aside from throwing a grenade at people, but, you know, there's that. But I was in the service. That was not terrorism. Okay, so anyway, it got down to that. It was, so I got the qualification. Now, once an offering is qualified, the company has to shut up. It goes into a quiet period. There will be a time when you can do what you need to do. The investment bankers, if you've got investment bankers, they can offer the stock. Now, the Form S1, by the way, there are two others with which I am fairly familiar. There's the Form SB1 and the Form SB2. These are for smaller companies that want, less than a couple of 100 million that want to raise stock. Now, I did a couple of SB1s, and I'm not even sure, I'm not going to talk to you about things I don't understand fully, the SB2. But the SB1, really, it was just as much of a pain in the butt as the S1 was. although it was supposed to be a lighter burden of disclosures. But anyway, what was I going to say? Now, once you're going to have a date when the offering opens, the Form S-1 has three parts. There's all this technical stuff that you have to file on the first leg. Just all kinds of legalese and crap. And then there is the second two parts. That second part, the third part is your financials, pretty much. The second part is the selling document itself. What I am going to give to prospective investors. It's called a prospectus. It's called a prospectus. Yes. Prospectus Listorum or whatever that was. Prospectus. That is the selling document. Now, you will see if it's an investment banking syndicate, they will put these notices in fancy newspapers. But they will always say, this is called a tombstone. All it will do is disclose that this company is going to sell stock, the approximate price at which it will sell, and how many shares will sell. You will see at the top of it the disclosure, this is neither an offer to sell nor a solicitation for an offer to buy the securities noted below. Those securities can be sold only through the prospectus, which is available from. So in other words, you have to have the prospectus in the investor's hands before you can do anything. That is the only legal vehicle for the selling of the stock in the public offering. And you cannot give that prospectus out until the quiet period is over. Except for, there is a version of the prospectus that has red letters on it. Parts of the front and back and maybe even inside are in red letters. It's called a red herring. I can actually give that out to certain outside interests. It is not a legal document in the sense of being a selling document, because the final prospectus might actually be different from this red herring that you're handing out. One thing that is almost, well, quite frequent is that the stock price, let's say that you print the red herring and it says $15 per share common stock, 100 million shares, okay? Well, what happens if there's a drop in the market right before the opening date of the offering? You would print the prospectus with a lower stock price on it than was on the red herring. So in other words, the red herring has information that could change. It can't be the selling document. Okay? So know that the red herring is a, think of it like a draft of the actual selling document called the prospectus. Now, as I said, interestingly enough, if I had done some private placements, I might very well be interested in registering those securities in an IPO for new stock. You watch that. You read a prospectus. You look to see if they're registering a whole pile of old Rule 144 stock. You got to be careful because, I mean, I could do an offering for 10 million new shares. But in there, I'm also releasing 4 million shares of private placement stock, which would really dilute the heck out of your punch that you were getting out of the stock you were buying. So always keep an eye out for that. Another thing, oddly enough, about an S-1, companies can do, and there are some companies that do this all the time, what's called shelf registration. For example, Microsoft might actually register, do a Form S-1, I'm just throwing a number out, for 1 billion shares of common stock. But at the current time, all they're going to do is sell 100 million shares of that. They put the other $900 million on a shelf, kind of, virtual shelf. And then as they need more equity capital, they just pull this already registered stock off the shelf and just sell it. It's already been taken care of. You will see companies do shelf registrations. Sometimes they don't actually sell any of the stock at the time of the filing of the in the context of the Form S-1. They just have it on the shelf so that they can sell the stock as they need long-term equity capital over the next few years. I saw, and I think I saw, that Microsoft pulled off the shelf a pile of stock not too long ago. They just sold it. It was already registered some time back. It was just part of a shelf registration. They probably got a lot more on the shelf. I didn't investigate it, but they probably got a lot more. Whenever they need more money, they just pull it off the shelf. Okay? Yeah, go ahead. Somewhat, because what we do as investors is we say, all right, here's the price of the stock based upon this number of shares outstanding. However, there is this probability in this time frame that they'll pull some more off the shelf and sell it, upping the supply, dropping the price. So we would be mindful that the price must reflect the potential for devaluation through dilution down the road. Okay? Yeah. Say it again? No, it would not. Okay. Not until it is, okay, there is outstanding. The stock that's sitting there on the shelf could be subject to showing as outstanding. But generally, it seems to me, and I've looked at this from a couple of different times, that the numbers that they show in the accounting statements show only the stock that is already out there. So in other words, the additional paid in capital line where you disclose the number of shares outstanding would be based upon stock that has already been sold as additional paid in capital. So that stock that's sitting there could be included as dilution.
So it's just kind of like a
business
situation.
Yes, it is. That is the very thin top layer of a vast ocean of securities regulation. The warning I'm giving you, though, is that it is risky out there. Watch your step. Get good advice from legal counsel and accountants if you're going to do anything like raise money through selling stock. Now, I'm going to give you a quiz here, and then I'm going to let you go.